I hope you notice the change in the expression. It is not, how do I control this? If you say, how do I control this, you will never do it. You will control something else. And here the control or the restraint is directed at the I itself. And so how is this controlled? How is this control effected? Abhyasa vairagya abhyam tannirodha. How is this control affected? By, it is conventional to say, by two means. But you will presently see that they are not two, but one. Abhyasa and vairagya. I started sharing with you something which a holy man in the Himalayas said, but then we got distracted. This man, this holy man, he said, Abhyasa and Vairagya. Abhyasa has been interpreted by teachers to mean all these yoga asanas, pranayama, meditation, and good eye, right action, wrong action, all sorts of dietic discipline, study of scripture, all this, all that people have done in the name of yoga. And Vairagya has been interpreted to mean that you shouldn't look at temptations, you shouldn't think of temptations, you shouldn't touch this, you shouldn't smell this, you shouldn't learn, all this. You shouldn't hear this, all that. All that may be true, we are not concerned with that. This man said it is quite simple. What is Abhyasa? See that the infinite alone exists to live in that consciousness, that the infinite alone exists, is Abhyasa. And Vairagya, he says, never think of the world again. That is Vairagya. Never think of the world again. Never let a thought of the world arise in the mind. That is Vairagya. And constantly remember or contemplate that the infinite alone is real. If that is meaningful to you, bye-bye, that's all. You can go home. If it is not, we might continue. These two are not two, but one. If you again come back to this pillar with the energy passing through, on the one side it is experience, on the other side it is expression. Abhyasa is related to the expression part of it. And Vairagya or dispassion concerns the experience part of it. The sublimation of experience or the realization that the experience does not relate to the me is Vairagya. The direct knowledge or understanding that the experience has nothing whatsoever to do with the me. The me itself being part of this experiencing. The me itself being just one little ripple, one little wave in this ocean of cosmic consciousness. It has no business to experience anything. Much less to classify experiences. That is Vairagya. Which necessarily means that you do not even suppress your reactions. This is terribly important. There is no desire to suppress the reactions, nor is there a desire to promote the reactions. Because to say no is as good or as bad as to say yes. But to see that the doors are open and the wind blows inside. The room is not interested at all in inviting the wind to blow, and the room is not terribly whatever happens, happens. This is also part of it. It's possible only when there is direct realization of the totality of which this is part. That should not never be forgotten. This personality cannot and need not isolate itself either as the enjoyer or as the renouncer. The personality is not to be regarded as distinct and separate from the whole, either as the experiencer or as the renouncer. But the personality is itself a small little cell or particle in the cosmic whole. That is Vairagya. And the same thing when it comes to the side of the expression. It is not I that does. It is only as long as the I feels itself to be the doer, is there need for it to classify its actions into this is right action, this is wrong action, this is that, so and so, so and so. It is then that the action springs from the vritti. I know this to be true and therefore I am doing this. I know this to be false and therefore I am doing this. And my actions spring from all this, from right knowledge, from wrong knowledge, from imagination, from sleep, from memory. But when it is seen that the action does not spring from the me and therefore from none of these five psychological categories, when it is seen to be a sheer, pure movement in consciousness, there is abhyasa. Tatra sthitau yatno abhyasa. Abhyasa is, it's unfortunately translated effort. But if there is an effort, it doesn't belong to the me. The effort itself belongs to the movement of energy in consciousness. Yeah? The movement of energy is energetic, dynamic. And therefore, it can also do something, right? Let it do. Even the effort to remain steady in that wisdom or in that realization belongs to the movement of energy in consciousness. And that steady effort to remain established in that consciousness or realization is abhyasa. In which case, should I come to the meditation in the morning or not? The asker of this question being the question is already wrong. If that energy wants to meditate, come to the meditation hall and meditate, let it happen. I do not have to push, I do not have to pull. Does it also ask? Does the personality also ask? And therefore, must I remain in bed till 9 o'clock? What for? The intelligence that asks, why should I go and meditate? That might also begin to ask, why should I stay in bed? When both these things are seen as something ridiculous and absurd, then the energy takes over and does what it wants to do. It may want to stand on its head, let it. It may want to do some hatha yoga, let it. It may want to go on a fast, let it. All this is valid, nothing. There is no suppression, there is no repression here at all, there is no pushing, there is no pulling. What is eliminated really is what did not exist. It's an extraordinary elimination. The individual personality as an individual, distinct and different from the totality, from the whole, as something which can act independently, as something which can feel independently, that was never in existence, that was never there. How this foolish idea arose, nobody knows. We'll come to that next week when we discuss the avidya part of it. How it arose, nobody knows. How come? Because it never arose. It wasn't there. Why doesn't anybody know? Why doesn't anybody come and show you this is maya? This is avidya. This is ignorance. Both the Yoga Vasistha and Ramana Maharshi's teachings, this idea occurs again and again and again. You are talking of ignorance as if it is an existential reality. This is nonsense. If you say, oh yes, I see ignorance, then it becomes reality. It's no longer ignorance. That which you see is truth. How can the unreal be seen? If it is seen, it is real. It is reality. You are using a wrong word. You know, we can all change the convention and from now on, we can call 2 plus 2, 7. In other words, you are merely using another word. Instead of using the word 4, you use the word 7. But you refer to the same substance. If you say, I can see the unreality, I can see the unreal, I can experience the unreal, I have realized the unreal, which means you have made the unreal real. What do you call it unreal anymore? If it is unreal, it cannot be seen. It does not exist. And if people have said that this unreality cannot be explained, it cannot be seen, it cannot be explained, we do not know how it arose, they are merely saying it never came into being at all. I am able to think of it. Of course you are able to think of it. And the moment you drop that thinking, it's gone. Tatra sthitau yatno abhyasa. And so this abhyasa or practice is merely to realize the real to be real. And that thing was never an individual independent of the totality. So when that is dropped, all actions spring from the totality. One doesn't have to restrain, pull, push, Nothing. And its own counterpart is Vairagya, or Vairagya also means uncoloredness. Uncoloredness. At present I am looking at what reaches me, what I call, what I have chosen to call experience. I am looking at all these experiences through some kind of colored lens. Therefore, some experiences appear to be pleasant and others appear to be unpleasant. Even this doesn't seem to be true for all time. That which was considered pleasant at one stage is considered unpleasant at some other stage, at some other time, in some other mood. I love babies, I love children, but I may not feel them welcome company when I want to sleep. Even you. Even the mother. When you want to sleep, when you are tired, and when the baby comes to play with you, you are not in a mood to do that. That which gave you delight, pleasure, the greatest pleasure, is painful at times. So, it was when I looked at all these experiences through tinted glasses, colored lens, those experiences themselves appeared to be colored in the same light, the same color. When your own heart and mind are brilliant, delightful, then you find delight everywhere in the world. And when you are miserable, everything seems to be miserable. And you look at this lake and say, my God, those mountains must have been terribly miserable. They have been crying, crying, crying all the time. Why is it so? And Vairagya is uncoloredness. Can the mind be persuaded to see the truth that, my friend, these things that happen in the world have nothing whatsoever to do with you? Nobody is interested in making you unhappy, and nobody at all is interested in making you happy. This is one important truth that it is good for us to contemplate. We have often told ourselves that I make you happy or you make me happy. It is absurd. Why don't you make me happy at all times? It makes you, you try to make me happy because you have your own motivation. I try to make you happy because I have my own motivation. It is patently seen in some relationships. It is not so easily seen in other relationships. True and total unselfishness is possible only for the one who has overcome the self, who has ceased to be, in other words, yes? True and total unselfishness is possible only in the case of one who has ceased to be. When the individual is not there, merged in the cosmos, when I is not there, when the self is not there at all, then that person, he seems to be a person only in your eyes. He is not a person anymore. He, whatever he does spontaneously, unselfishly, without expecting anything in return, because he is not there. Except for these few people, The rest of us are engaged in our own little trips. It's possible that somebody's actions are 80% selfish and the other person's actions are 20% selfish. It's like two or three of us standing on one side of a big blind well and arguing amongst ourselves. I say I can only jump 1/4 of it, 1/4 diameter. And she says she could jump half. And he says, oh no, I could jump 3/4. Doesn't matter, all of us land in the same place. You can of course nearly make it, yeah? You can nearly make it. It has no value at all. Only that yogi or sage or whatever you wish to call him, liberated person, whose personality has dissolved in a manner of speaking in the cosmic consciousness, just as those waves which played upon the surface of the lake have been withdrawn into the lake. My God. They were the lake even when the waves were playing on the surface of the lake. When that has happened, when the individuality has been seen, realized to be nothing other than cosmos, only he is capable of total unselfishness. The others, we are all looking for some kind of back scratching or other. So the experiences can be totally uncolored, says the Yoga Sutras. Tat param purusha khyateer guna vaitrishtyam. Till then, till that happens, drishtanushtravika vishaya vitrishtnasya vashikara samjnya vairagyam. What is this passion? Dispassion in common language is drishtanushtravika vishaya vitrishtnasya vashikara samjnya. You hear something, you hear of a pleasant object, you hear of an object of enjoyment, something which gives you great happiness, or you have had some experience which gave you some sensual pleasure. And what does the impression left by the pleasure in you, what does it want? It wants to possess that object. The experience of pleasure left in your mind by the past experience wants to possess the object. Draw the object to itself so that you can repeat the pleasure whenever you like. It's beautiful, isn't it? Whenever I like, it must be waiting for me. This is unfortunately the problem with domestic situations too. The husband must be ready or the wife must be ready to be there whenever I want. What about whenever the other person wants? That's the whole conflict, isn't it? The husband feels flouted if when he comes home the wife is not ready with a cup of coffee. And the wife is also disappointed if the husband doesn't bring home a present or something like that. The same thing, same problem. Why do I want to possess the object at all? Why do I want to possess the object of pleasure? Isn't this the commercial stuff? You have video tape recording equipment now. You can plug into the television set. And you can record a program and you can listen, see it whenever you like it. Why must I enjoy it whenever I like it? Why must I not enjoy it whenever it is there? The whole concept of possessing the object of enjoyment is this. It is not that I am going to enjoy that all the time. No, no, that's not possible. Then it will become boring. It is not that I want to enjoy it all the time. Why do I want to possess it? I can enjoy it whenever I like. This is called Vashikara. Bring that thing, keep it in your cupboard, and you won't look at it again. The dresses. The craving wants to possess. Now you must try to understand it carefully. A craving arises and the craving wants to possess the object. And dispassion or vairagya merely means possessing the craving itself. Possessing the craving. Embracing this craving so tightly that it does not function independent of me, independent of you, independent of that intelligence. Possessing the object of enjoyment is the nature of the craving. And wisdom says, I will possess this craving. Possess not in the sense of expressing it, but holding it tight in my hand so that it won't act independent of wisdom. If that is clear, that is vairagya. That's what that expression literally means. Drishta anushravika vishaya vitrishnasi vashikara samjna. Trishna is craving. The craving wants to possess what has been seen and what has been heard, the objects of pleasure. And vairagya, or the wisdom, uncoloredness of the wisdom, wants merely to possess this craving. So that it does not get out of hand. It behaves as wisdom wants it to behave. So that intelligence in you may want to eat a chocolate cake, go ahead. There's no need to suppress it. But the craving does not eat the chocolate cake, the wisdom eats the chocolate cake. A big difference. If you understand the difference, you have understood what is called moderation at once. Wisdom knows moderation. Craving is completely mad. That was another marvelous thing we saw in Swami Shivananda's case. Only he could, even when it came to eating and things like that, only he could do everything in moderation, absolute moderation. It's beautiful. He would say, oh, it's wonderful, it's very nice. And then eat just two or three spoonfuls, and, you know. And it was possible to see that even in the case of what we call good things, satsanga, meeting, whatever it is. It's very nice, very good. Kirtan, go singing and yelling and all sorts of things go on. Acharya, oh. He doesn't say, it's a good thing, let it continue forever and ever. No. Even there, a little bit of moderation is better. Whereas craving leads you completely astray, wisdom allows you to graze, but neatly tethered by restraint. Always at the end of a leash. Never lose. And this goes on and on and on till one is able to, when the, till the totality is realized as the only reality, then there is no effort at all, there is no struggle, nothing. Tat param purusha khyate guna vaitrishnyam. Then there is no restraint as restraint. All action is naturally restrained. When there is no individuality, when there is no conflict between the me and the other, when there is no division between the me and the other, and therefore when there is no contact between me and the other, when one alone exists, there is no effort, there is no craving, there is no rejection. Alone is another funny word, I think it's a spelling mistake. Alone means all one. All one is alone. When it is realized that all is one, one is alone. Not when you shut yourself up in a room.